Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt, and today we got a doozy. Today we start a three-part deep dive into That 70s Show. Oh my God. I'm calling it That 70s Show Conspiracy, but it's not really about That 70s Show necessarily, but what a strange story this is. We're going to go into... I don't even know where to start. I got 24 pages of notes. And according to my math, that's about 3 hours of content. And as you know, I don't have the Alex Jones boner juice to go 3 hours like some guys. You're getting an hour out of me, and then I'm taking a coffee break. And in a perfect world, if nothing else distracts me, maybe I can record part two today or tomorrow, and then part three a week later, whatever. I don't know. I'm gonna try to get this out as soon as I can because it's very time relevant. But we're gonna talk about what I'm calling That 70s Show Conspiracy. We're talking about Danny Masterson, Ashton Kutcher, Scientology. It's all here. We're going to talk about these strange Hollywood types mixed in with some very strange belief systems. And of course, the whole cast of That 70s Show, we're going through it. We're going through Danny Masterson, Ashton Kutcher, Mila Kunis, Wilmer Valderrama, Lisa Robin Kelly, and Topher Grace. We're going to talk trials, timelines, statements, Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis supporting their convicted rapist friend, Danny, then their subsequent apology tour. That's all in part one. Then part two is going to get, it's going to get dicier and hotter and spicier as we go. All right. Part one ain't nothing compared to part two. Part two, we're going to talk about Scientology and the occult. We're going to go through a little background, a little brief primer on Scientology and the occult, if you're not familiar. Jack Parsons, Charles Manson, Stanley Kubrick, Danny Masterson, Tom Cruise, Laura Prepon from That 70s Show as well. We're going to talk about Chrissy Carnell Bixler's accusations against Ashton Kutcher and Danny Masterson. That's going to be a banger. Then part three is going to put part two to shame. We're talking about Ashton Kutcher. Deep dive into Kutcher. I think we're going to start talking about Ashton Kutcher in part two. But part three, we're going to dig deep. And I don't like what I see. I don't like it one bit. We're going to talk about Thorne, the CIA, surveillance, saving the kids, or worse yet, saying you're saving the kids, but trying to take some money. Ties to Epstein, Clinton, venture capitalists. None of those things are good. Analyzing this inflated figure that all these child saviors, they use this figure, 100 to 300,000 kids human trafficked every year in America. An unbelievable figure. And it turns out it's unbelievable because it's not true. Oh, boy. And, you know, we already criticized Sound of Freedom, so I'm already on people's, I try not to swear on this show, crap list. I cringe myself at a... You know, I got a mouth of a sailor, but I try to keep it clean for people. But of course, we want to save the kids. Of course, even if it's only 1,000 kids, we need to save them. All right, I'm on the same team, folks. But if we're being lied to and grifted upon, we need to know that. And I know that's not a popular thing to tell people. When people go and watch Sound of Freedom, they say, "Oh my God, they're saving the kids. Here's $1,000, please." No, you're funding this liar to get helicopter trips to make himself feel like he's a superhero. That's what you're doing. Maybe, allegedly, possibly. But yeah, Ashton Kutcher might not be far behind. What's old boy from Operation Underground Railroad? What's his name? I already forgot his name. Tim Ballard. That's it. Yes, Tim Ballard. And I've given him hundreds of dollars. Hundreds of dollars. So don't come at me with, "Oh, Isaac, you don't want to protect..." No, I want to protect the kids, but I don't want these grifters to lie and say they're protecting the kids. And they're not doing it. They're taking money to be... I don't know what. Gods. Fake gods. Anyways, in part three, we talk about the murder. The murder of Ashton Kutcher's girlfriend and how he possibly... There's accusations that, and allegations that there's some secrets about Ashton's real involvement with the murder of his girlfriend. Crazy. It's wild. This is a wild set of shows. You better stay subscribed to this podcast. Don't be left out in the cold with all the losers. You better stay subscribed. And then in part three, we're going to go through some video clips, some old interviews people have been pointing to and saying, this is what's been going on the whole time. Mila was 14 and these guys were all sexual predators all around her. We're going to talk about that. Whew. So, but first we got to get through part one. So without further ado, let me take a sip of my Metamucil-laden water. Let's get into it. Character rundown. Let's start with that. And, you know, because what happened to spark this whole analysis? The sentencing of Danny Masterson, which I hadn't paid any attention to the guy. I never watched That 70s Show. I wasn't really into it. I'd seen episodes in passing because it was huge, right? It was all over the place. It's kind of like Big Bang Theory. I've never watched it, but I know it exists and I know what it looks like. I've seen it on people's TVs when I walk into the house or whatever, right? I knew who each actor was and kind of what their character is on the show. That's about it. You know, and it's honestly, it's a pretty funny show. Actually, I like it, what I had seen of it, but it was a period of my life where I was too busy. We're talking 98 to 2006 is when this show was on. I was in the military those years. And then when I got out of the military in 03, I went to college. So I just wasn't consuming media that much. I'm not like one of those, you know, there's a lot of truths out there. I don't watch TV or movies. I just read factual history books. You know, I'm real impressed by that. But I, myself, like to watch some trashy TV. I watch Survivor. I watch Real Housewives of Salt Lake. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not above watching That 70s Show. I just didn't, okay? But I don't like sitcoms either. So, tough. Tough sell. We're going to run down through the characters and the cast of that show. And again, that's not really going to be the focus of these episodes. I'm not going to be watching every episode and telling you the symbolism in the show like I normally do. We're going to talk about the personal lives of these actors, okay? Here's the people we include in our analysis. Ashton Kutcher. So much going on with this guy. That's why part three, we dive deep into this dude. And I actually like his work. I thought Dude, Where's My Car was hilarious. I liked Just Married. He did that movie with Brittany Murphy, who's now passed on. We did two episodes on her in the past, because that's another wild story. And The Butterfly Effect. I love The Butterfly Effect. That's a great movie. Now, granted, I haven't seen any of those since they came out, so maybe they don't hold up, but they were really great when they came out. He did a bunch of popular shows that I've never seen, like The Ranch. But most interestingly, he is a venture capitalist. Yes, we'll come back to that in part three. Uh-huh. I don't like what I saw there. He started out modeling and then immediately got on That 70s Show and boom, blew up. Now, he dated a woman named Ashley Ellerin in 2001 who was murdered. We'll come back to that as well, of course. But man, he dated Brittany Murphy. He was married to Demi Moore. And they have a 15-year age gap. She was 40 and he was 25. Okay. Totally legal. So that's great, you know. It's less creepy when the female's the older one. But then he married Mila Kunis. I thought her name was pronounced Mila Kunis all these years. Apparently it's Mila. That's what I've been hearing. So I'm going with it. Mila Kunis. His current wife. So, you know, they were on the show together 20 years ago, and now they're married. Great. Mila Kunis was dating Macaulay Culkin before Ashton Kutcher. I found that bizarre. No shade, no cap against... I'm not even using those words right. No shade on Macaulay Culkin. I just, you know, I don't know. Just surprised me. Maybe it's just me. Danny Masterson, convicted rapist. Used to be a DJ called DJ Donkey Punch. Huh. And if you don't know, that's if you look it up on Urban Dictionary, it's a pretty pretty gross term. You know? Very, dare I say, rapey. But he basically got canceled from acting back when the allegations first dropped. It was during the peak of the Me Too era in 2017. Of course, we're coming back to him real soon. Laura Prepon, she was the other female, main female on 70s Show. She had like the long red hair. She was actually dating Danny's brother. He's got a couple brothers that act as well. And she dated Danny's brother from 1999 to 2007, during which time she was a member of the Church of Scientology. And Wikipedia says she was in the Church of Scientology from 1999 to 2016. I presume Danny's the one that got her into it. And we'll talk about that in part two, I think. Wilmer Valderrama, a.k.a. Fez. We all love Fez. I'm going to read you from Wikipedia on his relationships. Valderrama met Mandy Moore when she was 15, and they dated when she was 16 or 17. Valderrama, who is 4 years her senior. Okay, not terrible, right? I mean, I try not to be too black and white on some of this stuff, but it's like, okay, if you're 20 and the girl's 16, like, you should know better, but it's like, it's not the same as like Seinfeld was what, 39 and he dated a 17-year-old? That's kind of creepy, you know. Anyway, Valderrama, he later claimed that Moore had lost her virginity to him, which she denied, which I think that was on the Howard Stern show. In 2004, Valderrama dated Lindsay Lohan, who was 18 at the time, and he was 24. Okay, again, not terrible. At least she's 18, right? From 2010 to 2016, he was in an on-again, off-again relationship with Demi Lovato. The two met when Lovato was 17 and Valderrama was 29. Ooh, it's getting a little dicey now. But they did not start dating until she turned 18. All right, fair enough. Lovato would later release the song 29, which was widely interpreted as a condemnation of Valderrama now that the singer himself was 29. Lovato did not directly confirm the inspiration and simply stated, "I feel like the song says it all." In January 2020, Valderrama became engaged to Amanda Pacheco, who is 11 years his junior. Now, if I look at the math there, in 2020, he would have been about 40, and she was born in 91, so she was about 29. Again, not terrible. I don't hate that. In December 2020, the couple announced they were expecting their first child. The daughter was born February 15th, 2021. So again, I mean, is he inappropriately into younger girls? I don't know. I mean, there's some smoke there. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I've seen worse, right? Hey, if it's legal, I don't judge. Because then I'd have to take down my boy Leo DiCaprio and like, hey, man. I know he's 40 or whatever. And his girlfriends are all 24. Hey, they're over 18. They're consenting adults. And I think it has to do with like, we're not going to talk about that now. Lisa Robin Kelly played the role. That might be a breaking social norms type conversation. If that's where me and my wife get loose on conversations and we throw opinions out there. Okay. Lisa Robin Kelly, she played the role of Lori Foreman on the show. She's not involved in any of this stuff today, but she did have a tumultuous life. She was on an episode of X-Files called Sijiji, about a satanic blood sacrifice during an astrological alignment, very occult. She left that 70s show because she had a problem with alcohol. She had a string of DUIs and domestic abuse, not only against her, but by her. Wikipedia says, in November 2012, police in Mooresville, North Carolina, arrested the 42-year-old Kelly and her 61-year-old husband, Robert Joseph Gilliam, after responding to a disturbance at their home. Both were charged with assault and released on bond. She later filed for a divorce and a restraining order against Gilliam. It says both were charged. That's why I say it seems that she also, was doing domestic abuse. I'm just telling you what I'm reading here. She checked into rehab in 2013 and died from an accidental, unspecified oral multiple drug intoxication. She died at the age of 43. Man, that's tough. And then finally, Topher Grace, the clean one of the bunch, looking like a real hero at this point. Nothing crazy going on here. He's covered in tattoos, so, you know, I love that. Great for him. So that's the main. And then, I'm not mentioning all the other characters in that 70s show. the dad, the father figure or whatever, he was on RoboCop. I don't remember his name, but I do remember he was in RoboCop. One of the greatest movies of all time. All right, let's start with Danny Masterson and the trials. All right. There's a lot to catch up on here because, like I said, I didn't pay attention to any of this stuff. So I tried to summate what had been going on. So let's go to Jessica Reed Krause's Substack. You can find that at jessicareedkrause.substack.com. September 8th, she wrote an article, 30 Years to Life. And that's what actually grabbed my attention is I saw Danny Masterson got 30-year sentence, and I thought, oof, that seems, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, rape's not okay. Like, 30 years, that seems like a lot. But then you read some of the details, and you hear about what happened to these poor women, and you think, I mean, if the jury, you know, found the stories credible, hey, you know? He's kind of an awful human being, is what it sounds like. Okay, I'm going to read you from Jessica Reed Krause. The first trial in November ended in a mistrial after a split jury could not reach a verdict. 7-5 voted in favor of acquittal. Ultimately, the jury could not convict him based on the evidence presented, but this hung jury meant the prosecution could and would retry him. The second verdict was announced yesterday, September 7th, and found Masterson guilty. Many are wondering what changed the jury's mind during the second trial. Why did he receive such a severe sentence without any solid evidence? Because again, like I said, I don't know the details of this case, but the thought in the masses is, man, isn't it just a he said, she said kind of thing? Like, ugh, it's kind of scary, right? The judge's sentencing explains what happened. I'm going to read you from the same article. Mr. Masterson, you are not the victim here. Your actions 20 years ago took away another person's choice and voice. Your actions 20 years ago were criminal, and that's why you are here, Judge Almeida said. Almeida told Masterson she knows he's wondering how you can be convicted of a sexual incident occurring 20 years ago involving a woman who you believe is disgruntled and has a vendetta against you. You were not convicted on the testimony of one person. Almeida continued, you were not convicted based on rumors, innuendo, gossip, and speculation. You were convicted based on evidence that 12 people in the community found to be credible. You were convicted because each of the victims reported the rapes to someone shortly after the rapes occurred. Uh-huh. So it's not just he said, she said. It's a little bit of she told people and they testified in a court of law. And they go into it, and this is tying into the Scientology aspect of the case. She pointed out that Masterson paid one of his victims nearly $1 million to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which she said was an awful lot to pay for something he insists never happened. Fair point. So Danny had an almost acquittal, then retried, then gets 30 years to life. That's 30 years until he's eligible for parole. Now, Jessica, she, from what I understand, went to the courtroom as well, and she saw Leah Remini. Leah Remini, of course, a very outspoken critic of the Church of Scientology. She did a whole show on A&E, interviewing people who were members who left the religion and said all these horrific things. She was apparently in the courtroom putting a publicist in their place in the back of the room. If you read the article, it's kind of interesting. But let's do a recap of the entire timeline. Because if you're like me, you're like, wait a minute. When did this happen? What happened? And this is, again, Jessica Reed Krause's article, and it's titled On the Eve of Danny Masterson's Sentencing. We got to go back to March of 2017. All right. The LAPD started an investigation after three women accused Danny Masterson of raping them in the early 2000s. Masterson's spokesperson insinuated this is an anti-Scientology crusade and called out Leah Remini. All right, and from what I'm reading here, I think the idea is that they're saying that Leah Remini orchestrated this to try to take down the Church of Scientology, or egged it on, maybe, after one victim talked with her. I don't know. And I think this was around the time of Leah Remini's show on A&E, okay? Then December 2017, Netflix fires Masterson during the investigation. This is the middle of the Me Too movement, mind you. So he claimed to be part of this presumed guilty before being presumed innocent group, you know. And infamously, you know, I don't know. I'm hesitant to talk about some of these things because I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying. But if you recall, wasn't it Asia Argento who was one of the first Me Too architects? It turns out she was sleeping with an underage boy the whole time. Ugh. I mean, I don't know if he ever said it was against his will, which would be kind of the whole thing, right? That's the whole idea behind Me Too, is like hearing women and letting them tell their stories and, you know, and calling for men to step up and stop being this way, right? Which I support, you know? I'm very much a feminist, very much for equal rights for women and for men to sort of try to understand what it's like to walk through a day in a woman's shoes. You know, and the best example I have, the one that sort of hit me the most, the best example I could relay is, as a man, if you've ever walked through a parking garage or a dark parking lot at night, you don't think much of it. You just walk into your car. But if you're a woman, like, they're worried about these kinds of things because it happens. And so they just, it's, you know, and it's like, you know, people of color, man. They walk through this world in a different sort of set of shoes. It doesn't mean you have to be shameful for being a white man. Like, you don't have to beat yourself up and say you're the ultimate devil, but you got to hear people out, right? You got to hear what people's experiences are. August 2019, quickly moving on. August 2019, four of Masterson's accusers sued the Church of Scientology for stalking and trying to silence them. Okay. The defendants conspired to and systematically stalked, harassed, invaded their and their family's privacy and intentionally caused them emotional distress and silence and intimidate them. Now, the Church of Scientology and Danny Masterson, they deny all these allegations. They're like, it's a shameful money grab, which, hey, those things do happen. There are shameful money grabs that do happen. And I don't know the answer. I wasn't there for any of this. I don't know what really happened. June of 2020, Danny Masterson arrested, charged with rape, faces 45 to life in a state prison. The accusations are that he raped a 23-year-old back in 2001, then another 23-year-old and a 28-year-old in two separate incidents in 2003. This is all during the peak of That 70s Show. And all of these were at his home in Hollywood Hills. It says there were two more accusations from two more women. These were all Jane Does, from what I understand. Those two other accusations were dropped for lack of evidence and a statute of limitations. Now, I'm assuming one of those women who made the accusation was Chrissy Carnell Bixler. She's a model. She was Danny Masterson's girlfriend some time ago. She's been all over the news and the tabloids. And she's now married to Cedric Zavala Bixler. He is the lead singer for Mars Volta and At the Drive-In. And Rolling Stone had an article back in June of 2023. After the guilty verdict about this, because Cedric was on the socials talking about this whole thing, and they explained it as follows. In 2019, in addition to the criminal charges against Masterson, Bixler Zavala Carnell Bixler, that's the rock star dude and his model wife, and other Jane Doe victims filed a civil lawsuit against the actor and the Church of Scientology, alleging they were systematically stalked after Carnell Bixler came forward with her accusations of rape against Masterson. Among their allegations, the church members staked out their homes, sent them threatening messages, and subjected them to everything from wiretapping to hacking and credit card fraud. Carnell Bixler and Bixler Zavala even claimed Scientologists killed their dog. Man, you come at my dog, you're catching hot lead, boy. That's where I would draw the line. I mean, I would draw the line before that, but you know what I mean. Yeah, so pretty strong accusations here, right? Some pretty awful things. And Chrissy Tarnell Bixler was on social media criticizing Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis. We're going to come back to that. But just know that these are, you know, these are the characters involved in this whole thing. But we're back in, now we're January 2021. Masterson pleads not guilty to 3 counts of forcible rape.
All right.
But there's 5, there's 5 accusers, only 3 of them go to court. Or, you know what I mean. Fast forward October 22, so damn near 2 years goes by, trial begins. The defense, Danny Masterson's defense, wants to bar any mention of the Church of Scientology. And that's a major part of this, because people are like, why is Scientology involved? Well, you're going to find out. The short version is that, well, I'm going to be careful how I talk, so I'm just going to read to you from articles, all right? Meanwhile, the prosecution wants free reign to say anything they want at all about the Church of Scientology, because the 3 women, the 3 accusers, the 3 Jane Does, were all members of the Church of Scientology during the time of the alleged attacks. Judge Charlene Olmedo permits the women to discuss the Church of Scientology, but only when relevant to the incidents. So kind of a halfway point here, okay? It is interesting that Danny's defense wanted to bar any mention of the Church of Scientology. I wonder why that is. I'm going to read to you from, I think, is this Jessica Reed Krause's article? Hang on, let me find out. I want to make sure I'm real correct here. Yep, Jessica Reed Krause's article. Where are we here? Okay. When Jane Doe number 1 took the stand as the prosecution's first witness, she testified that a church ethics officer forced her to make peace with Masterson after she claimed she was penetrated anally by the actor against her will in 2002. Quote, "My understanding my entire life was that you can never be a victim. Nothing ever happens to you that you didn't cause. No matter what condition you find yourself in your life, no matter how horrible, you are responsible. You created that." So I guess what the claim would be here is that she's saying that this event took place, and being a member of the Church of Scientology, they all were, she went to the ethics officer, and the ethics officer was like, hey, just make peace with it. Because they don't, apparently, it seems like they don't like the victim mentality aspect, which, you know, I don't like victim mentality either, but like, that's, I mean, penetrated anally against your will, like, bro, like that's something different, right? Jane Doe, number 1, continued to have a relationship with Masterson and claimed she was sexually assaulted by the star at his home in April 2003. Now, this gets into psychology of, because when you watch this from the sideline, you say, okay, so this horrible thing happened. Why do you stick around with this creep? And I don't know the psychology of why that happens, but apparently it happened. She was emotional on the stand recounting the alleged incident. The woman testified she started feeling disoriented after drinking something Masterson gave her. She passed out on his bed, and when she awoke, claimed Masterson was on top of her. The woman claimed she tried to fight him off, but the actor reached into a drawer in a nightstand, pulled out a gun, and threatened by telling her to shut the F up. After the alleged rape, the woman said she went to see her ethics officer. Quote, "My understanding is I would immediately be guilty of a high crime. A high crime comes with a penalty of expulsion from Scientology." This is Jane Doe number 1, the victim of this, right? "My life would be over. My parents would have to disconnect from me. My daughter couldn't go to her school. I wouldn't have anywhere to work or live. I wouldn't have anywhere to go." In April 2004, Jane Doe number 1 wrote a letter to the church's international justice chief and asked for permission to bring criminal charges against Masterson. She believed she was told no, but did so anyway with the LAPD 2 months later. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office decided not to press charges at the time. The woman ultimately settled with Masterson for $400,000. Now, why did I read all of that to you? It's because there appears to be some kind of relevance to the Church of Scientology to this case that I wasn't aware of before reading this. And it seems like the mainstream media and the news, I don't know. I don't pay a ton of attention, so it's hard to condemn them. But I catch headlines and stuff, and, you know, as they come across the feed, and if it's interesting, I'll read the article, but it certainly wasn't in the headlines. Well, maybe it was, but I didn't catch it. And to be fair, like I said, I haven't paid any attention to this story. Then it goes through Jessica Reed Krause's article, goes through Jane Doe number 2 and number 3's experience of being forcibly raped. Number 3 was asleep, woke up in pain, asked Danny about it. He confirmed he did the rape and he laughed about it. Number 2 said she had another like spiked drink that made her numb and he assaulted her like a rag doll. And she didn't report him because she did not want to be declared a suppressive person. And again, I want to be careful here. They're claiming that the Church of Scientology's beliefs and teachings, I don't know if helped perpetuate this or had a role in it, is the claim. So the jurors, they deliberate a bunch and they deadlock. This is November 22 now. And the case finally come to a close years later. And they deadlock. So January of 23, they're like, let's do it again. Let's do it with a new jury. That previous hung jury, like we said, leaned towards acquittal. The votes were 10-2, 8-4, and then 7-5 when they finally become a hung jury. Okay, so we're going to do it again. April of 23 now. Opening arguments, April 24th, 2023. Again, reading from Jessica Reed Krause's articles on this. In the first trial, Judge Charlene Olmedo had not allowed the term drugging, as prosecutors could only say the women were incapacitated when they said they were attacked, according to the Huffington Post. Well, that's weird. I mean, drugging is it's extra, you know, Bill Cosby-esque. Scientology was also mentioned more as the judge ruled that further evidence related to the church could be heard in the retrial as the organization's policies and procedures were called into question. Deputy DA Ariel Anson told the jury during the closing arguments, "The church taught his victims, rape isn't rape, you cause this, and above all, you are never allowed to go to law enforcement. In Scientology, the defendant is a celebrity, and he is untouchable." On May 31st, so a month later, Masterson is convicted on 2 of the 3 rape counts, faces up to 30 years in prison. That's 15 years for each count. Tons of criticism starts flying. Like how the women can ruin the man's life with, you know, supposed minimal evidence, yet they can remain anonymous Jane Doe's. September 23, now we're, you know, last week. The judge sentences Danny to the full 30 years. He's 47 now. He's not going to be eligible for parole until he's 77. He's done. It's like, it might as well be life. It's a wrap. Danny waived the rights to speak during the sentencing. He didn't testify. We also find out that Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis wrote letters to the judge in support of Danny Masterson. I think the idea is that he gets found guilty, and before sentencing, they plea for Danny's life, basically. And they're like, hey, this guy, I guess, defending him, right? To try to not get too harsh of a penalty. So they write these letters. They eventually go public, as they always do, from what I read. And then they immediately go on an apology tour. Ashton and Mila immediately go to apology tour, which when you watch that video, it seems very scripted. It seems like they're literally reading off a paper or whatever. Now, Jessica provides the various supporting statements for Masterson from neighbors, friends, family. We're going to only focus on Mila and Ashton. Okay, I'm going to read to you right from it. Mila Kunis says, I first met Danny during our time working together on That 70s Show, and from the very beginning, I could sense his innate goodness and genuine nature. Throughout our time together, Danny has proven to be an amazing friend, confidant, and above all, an outstanding older brother figure to me. His caring nature and ability to offer guidance have been instrumental in my growth, both personally and professionally. One of the most remarkable aspects of Danny's character is his unwavering commitment to discouraging the use of drugs, which is priceless if it's true that he was drugging women. I mean, come on. And in part two, we talk about Scientology and Charles Manson, who learned a lot of Scientology. And he used to also, allegedly, used to dose his ladies. He used to pretend he was taking LSD, but he would only give them the LSD. You know, it's a weird pattern. His influence on me in this regard has been invaluable. In an industry where the pressures and temptations of substance use can be overwhelming, Danny played a pivotal role in guiding me away from such destructive paths. His dedication to avoiding all substances has inspired not only me, but also countless others in our circle. Danny's steadfastness in promoting a drug-free lifestyle has been a guiding light in my journey through the entertainment world and has helped me prioritize my well-being and focus on making responsible choices. His genuine concern for those around him and his commitment to leading by example make him an outstanding role model and friend. Now, let me read you Ashton Kutcher's, and then I'll give you my stupid opinion like you wanted it. Let's see. Okay, Ashton Kutcher. Danny takes his job seriously. Weird laid out sentence, but okay, Ashton, we're listening. What? Danny takes his job seriously. He is kind, courteous, and hardworking. He treated everyone from the grips to the Teamsters to the actors to the caterers as equals. As a role model, Danny has consistently been an excellent one. I attribute not falling into the typical Hollywood life of drugs directly to Danny. Anytime that we were to meet someone or interact with someone who was on drugs or did drugs, he made it clear that that wouldn't be a good person to be friends with. And for me, that was an implication that if I were to do drugs, he wouldn't want to be friends with me, which is something I never would want to risk or jeopardize. I am grateful to him for that positive peer pressure. He also set an extraordinary standard around how you treat other people. There was an incident where we were at a pizza parlor and a belligerent man entered who was berating his girlfriend. We had never met or seen these people before, but Danny was the first person to jump to the defense of this girl. It was an incident he didn't have to get involved in, but proactively chose to because the way this man was behaving was not right. He's always treated people with decency, equality, and generosity. Now, all this is very interesting because... And we're going to wrap up part one here. And part two is where we're going to get juicy. I'm going to try to record that for you today after I take a little coffee break. But what's interesting is that they received tons of condemnation for this. All right. And I could look at this two ways. On the one hand, your friend was drugging and raping women. Like, he's a monster. Now, the side of him they didn't see him drugging and raping chicks. They saw this great guy who, you know, that is great. He was being a voice of reason to be like, hey, man, you shouldn't do drugs. And I had read that that's what Scientology did for him. That's his teaching of theirs. And Charles Manson even talked about how they hit their teachings helped him with his depression, I think. We'll talk about that in part two, Conan, next. But the it's like Twin Peaks, right? We're watching the Twin Peaks thing. We're doing the Grey Lodge where we're deep diving into the episodes. And one concept you see is the duality concept. These people, they'll have a wife and then they'll have a side piece or whatever. And you see them doing good things and they're doing bad things. And that's the real human nature, right? It's not black and white. People aren't all evil or all good. This guy had some good sides to him. You know, say, like they say with Adolf Hitler, like, he had good sides to him. Wasn't he like a vegetarian or something? You know, that doesn't mean that he shouldn't do 30 years in prison or whatever. Like, you can't do what you did, bro. But Ashton and Mila were merely saying, hey, man, like, this is the side of him we've seen. I don't think they said, I don't know that their intention was to say, like, hey, he would never do the rape thing. You should let him off the hook. I don't think that was the intent. I think the intent was to say, like, there's a good side to this guy. And I think that's the point of the letters. And, like, I don't disagree with that in a way. It's like, yeah, like, there's good sides to a lot of bad people, right? Not everyone's all wrong. Some people are, you know, possessed by demons and do awful things or whatever. So it's hard for me to say. A lot of people say, oh, F them all the way off, you know. And I'm like, eh. Like, I get where they're coming from, right? Like, you know, I had a friend, my dear close friend. He was my best friend for a couple years there. He was addicted to drugs, right? He's dead now. Died a few years ago. I assume it was an overdose. I don't really know the details. But anyway, I grew up with this guy, and he was just the funniest guy, and he was such a good person. And he got caught up in drugs and was, you know, robbing and stealing and doing all this horrific stuff. And you're just like, your heart breaks for them. You're like, ugh, like, please don't do this, man. Like, you're doing awful things. Because on the other hand, like, if some drug addict, like, you know, robbed someone I love, like, I would want their ass in prison. I'd be like, man, F that. You know, we're beating this guy down, right? So, like, it's hard. You know, there's two sides to every story, and it's like there's two sides to every person in a way. So, like, in a way, it's like, okay, they wrote these letters, and it's like, how do you defend a monstrous rapist? And it's like, well, you don't. But they tried to provide the good side to the judge to say, hey, he's not all bad. But the judge didn't give a shit. She was like, hey. I just swore. See, I tried to keep it clean. I'm trying. The judge was like, bro, like, you're getting 30 to life. Deuces. And it's fine. Like, I'm not crying about it. He wasn't my friend. It sounded like he was a scumbag to me, you know? So, anyway, as you can see, there's all this controversy about this whole case. And that was part one. Now, in part two, we're going to start talking about the occult concepts behind Scientology. All the key players, like I said, L. Ron Hubbard, Charles Manson, a little bit of Kubrick. And then we're going to get into the Scientology aspects of the trial. And Chrissy Bixler and her husband, Cedric Bixler Zavala, who is the lead singer for Mars Volta and at the drive-in. Some of the claims they were making. And it gets a little wild, right? And then we're going to talk about the accusation lobbed that Ashton Kutcher may know more about this murder of his girlfriend than was previously assumed. So stay subscribed to the show, because part two is going to be a banger. It's going to be a lot. I'm going to try to hurry up and get it done so you don't have to wait too long for it. We'll see what happens. And stay subscribed to the show. Until next time, stay woke.